You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network.
PackersTalk.com.
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
I want to be a lifetime
Cheesehead
Green Bay Packer.
You're looking good today.
Look out there, look at it.
Aaron Rodgers is the best football player I've ever seen, ever.
Aaron Rodgers goes deep on second and two. He's got a leap in Devontae Adams.
He's a man.
To go. Rodgers hangs in the pocket, throwing over. What am I trying to get in the morning for the touchdown?
Well, that defense is going to give a lot of teams struggles. We got a defense.
Aaron Rodgers.
Once again, we got a defense.
Cheesehead Radio.
All right, Cheesehead Nation, welcome back to Cheesehead Radio. It's our 10th season. With you tonight are your hosts, the spooky Kelly Hodgson. You can find her as @ThatPackerGirl on Twitter. Myself, the eerie C.D. Angeli Tundervision on Twitter. And not with us tonight, but celebrating his anniversary. And congratulations to he and his wife, Jersey Al of Packers Talk and Cheesehead TV. Jersey Al GVP on Twitter, enjoying a Bob Seger concert tonight. Sponsoring
and
Packers
happy
Talk.
What 60th anniversary? What is it?
85th anniversary. So sponsoring the Packers Talk Network once again are our good friends at Ticket King. They've been selling Packers Badgers and other tickets in Wisconsin for over 25 years. Have earned a reputation for excellent customer service and prices. They have an office across the street from Lambeau, so you can order your tickets online, pick them up. If you're looking for Packers tickets, be sure to check out the website, theticketking.com. That takes care of the formalities. Let's get this show on the road.
Who moves my cheese?
Let's hit the ground running and talk about our cheese winners from the Kansas City game. First of all, our Sharp Cheddar, who was your superstar in this game, Kelly?
Oh, for me, it's a no-brainer. It's Aaron Jones. So quietly, okay, maybe not quietly. He's the best thinking running back in the entire league. Ground, air, doesn't matter. He's the NFC Offensive Player of the Week. Aaron Jones it is.
All right. I'm actually kind of going to agree with you. I'm going to go with the 1-2 punch of Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams. Look, all season, when one is off, the other one takes over. And on top of that, they're both as good as wide receivers as we have those playing without Devontae. This is an overlooked luxury. Next up
they
is
are
our
peanut
Swiss
butter
cheese.
And jelly.
They are, which, by the way, is my nickname. Swiss cheese, who was your surprise player that showed up to play against the Chiefs?
Okay, I'm going to go with Jamal Williams, even though you picked him as your sharp cheddar. I mean, did you see that circus catch? I'm pretty sure Rodgers was throwing it out of bounds, but Williams managed to turn it into points on the board.
Now, I'm going to go with a strange pick. I'm going to go with Alan Lazard. Now, yes, Kumerow and Williams, as you said, got these glory receptions. But if you're watching closely, Lazard has been Mr. Reliable underneath. I think he had 5 targets, and he made every catch and turned them around and made the yards after the catch. He had some great downfield blocking, too. I think he made like a huge 3-second block on Aaron Jones' touchdown. That's a great return on an undrafted free agent. Finally,
I'd have to agree.
Limburger cheese. Limburger cheese. Who's the guy that let you down? Kelly.
Darius Shepherd, and the writing was on the wall. So long, and thanks for all the fish. Too many gas, no shining moments. It was time to definitely pull the trigger and release him.
Yeah, if you're going to pick a guy to be your Limburger cheese and they've already cut him, that's probably a pretty good choice.
You know, I didn't know he was cut as it was like picking it, and I'm like, oh, he got cut. Okay, I guess writing was on the wall.
Yeah, I think that was there for a little while. And too bad, but boy, you sure get spooked in that return game. We'll talk about that after the break. My Limburger cheese, Kevin King. We just cannot get this guy out of our doghouse. I want him to, but he was giving up like 10, 12-yard cushions, and he doesn't have the speed to make up for it. He was getting beat. But more importantly, King has studied extensively at the HaHa Clinton Dix School of Tackling, and he is just starting to make these wild dives at people's legs for tackles and missing them. And it's not only becoming routine, it's becoming costly.
Oh, most definitely. So there's a lot more Packer Talk coming out, so stay tuned. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
The Playbook.
All right. Kelly, how are you doing tonight?
Well, I'm feeling pretty good about this week in the Packers. I'm looking forward to this weekend.
It's a good time to be a Packer fan. You may have a hard time convincing Packer Twitter of this, but can we just process for a second? We are 7-1 in the first half of the season. I don't know how many times this has ever happened.
We weren't even that good the year we won the Super Bowl in 2010.
Oh.
And the next year, yeah, we were 8-0. Yeah, we lost the Chiefs of all teams that year, but we have not been that good in almost a decade.
And this is not with Mike McCarthy, Kelly. This is not with Ted Thompson. This is with Aaron Rodgers, but really with an entirely new supporting cast. But most of all, a rookie head coach that had no chance for success. Because as you know, when he was signed, there is this infantile quarterback he was going to be stuck working with that was going to completely undermine anything he did anyway.
Oh, you need to stop reading Mike Florio because I'm so sick of that narrative. So incredibly sick of that narrative. Yeah, I think this is something really special, and it's really remarkable. He's the first coach in Packers history to go 7-1 in his, or just to go this successful in his first season. Because what was McCarthy's first year? Was it four? Was it four wins or six wins? It was
he
in 2008.
Had,
it wasn't
rough...
pretty. It was 6-10. And I remember that was the first year I had season tickets. And at the end of the season, I remember looking at the guys around me like, "I see you next year. It's got to be better."
Well, it couldn't have gotten worse.
But this. Because he's got a better first-year record than Lombardi himself, and that's really remarkable. And I think that gets lost. You know, you hear a bunch of TV, they mention it almost every game, but it really gets lost along the way, especially when you look at Packers Twitter, and they're setting things on fire over ridiculous things. Like, we really have a special season going right now.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just a special season. It's got a special feel to it. Yeah, we got holes. Yeah, sometimes our run defense is a little porous, and maybe our pass defense isn't all, or our pass blocking isn't always perfect. But we got some real characters. We got some fun guys who enjoy playing football, and they are fun to watch. They're fun to watch play, and they're fun to watch win.
That joy is back, and I haven't seen that since about 2010, 2011. You have players that are making statements, that are stepping up and being leaders. And it isn't just a job this year. Last year, it seemed like everyone was miserable. Nobody liked being there. And Green Bay is a fun place to be. You've got the Smith brothers, and they're funny, and they really like what they're doing. And I think the fact that they're doing so well really adds to the joy. You have Rodgers, who seems to be enjoying being a quarterback again. And then you look at you look at Jones and Williams, and they're like doing the worm in the end zone. This is a fun team to watch. It isn't just that they're white hot right now, but they're amusing, and they're building off of each other's positivity. And I think that's something we have not seen in a long time.
And you know what I think the best part is? I don't think they are white hot. I think they're just good, and they finish games with more points than the other team. And that's what makes it fun, because you're not seeing, we're not going to like the Patriots, who, not only should win every game, but they should be winning every game by 18 points. And if they don't, something's wrong. I think every game we've gone into this season, we've had some concerning doubt in our stomach. Like, well, we should win this game, but, it could be a trap game. It could be, we're waiting for another shoe to fall. And that uncertainty does make it fun, because, I'm not going in expecting to win by 20. I'm expecting narrow wins or possibly narrow losses. And it's fun when you don't know, when you don't expect it, and you're not spoiled by expecting to have to win by 20 or there's something wrong.
I think I use white hot. Yeah, I may have used it wrong. They're white hot, I think, in a way that they are clicking enough that they're finding ways to win, and often in creative ways.
Mm-hmm.
When you start winning game after game after game and you're expected to win, I'm going to use the 1997 season and the 2011 season. 2011 only had the one loss against the Chiefs, and 1997, the year after they won the Super Bowl, you expected them to win. You expected them to win by big margins, and they were kind of ho-hum, oh yeah, they won again. But that sense of entitlement kind of carried over to two seasons where they kind of phoned it in at the end. They kind of phoned it in Super Bowl 32.
Mm-hmm.
And they fell apart in 2011, that season in the playoff game, at first round against the Giants. when you are not the one expected to win everything and you have to get creative and win in other ways, and when it gets exciting, that's where I think you get that intensity, because it isn't something where they're entitled, we are great, therefore we will win, kind of like the Patriots. It's we're scrappy and we're going to figure it out a way to do it. And not only is it exciting for us, I think it's exciting for the team. And I think that's what's energizing them, because watch the Instagram post, the Twitter post of their little video, Za'Darius Smith or the running back after the game, and how they are just wrapped up in the joy of victory. And because it isn't expected of them, they weren't expected to go this great this first year with Matt LaFleur. And they're kind of enjoying the ride right now, just as much as we are.
And, I'm just going to speak to this because the people that I follow on Twitter, on Packers Twitter, I guess I must follow a pretty good crowd. So if I follow you or I interact with you, I'm certainly not talking about you because you're all really cool. But in the larger realm of Packers Twitter, we are really developing hashtag Entitled Town.
Oh,
because
definitely.
The number of people just whining and crying and complaining and stressing and just not enjoying the ride or appreciating that how many rookie head coaches there are in the NFL right now and how unsuccessful every single one of them are, except for Matt LaFleur, how we have a 7-1 record. And this is unfathomable for any team other than the Patriot fan base right now. Any fan base would be giving anything to have a 7-1 record right now. And
we have this group
of people complaining. It's like, stop.
Well, look at the group that's complaining. They're the same people that were like, oh, my God, we just hired the offensive coordinator from the Titans who stinks. They have a horrible season. And that's all they could see. They couldn't see the potential. Well, obviously, the front office saw potential in LaFleur. And right now, I think these guys that were saying, oh, he's going to stink, they're the same ones that are complaining that their ice cream is too cold right now, honestly.
Well, let's hope that we turn it around. We're going to hopefully pick up another win this week, be 8-1. Hopefully people will start saying, hey, we should just appreciate this historic season thus far.
Last year we were not the team to watch or the team to beat. We're now the team that's getting flexed into the late games, starting right with the game against Carolina. We were the team nobody wanted to watch last year. We were like Miami, and now we're not. And how can you not be happy with progress? I was happy if we would have been, after last year, if we went 8-8, quite honest, or 9-7. Right now, we're on track to not be that mediocre. So I don't get where the complaints come. Yeah, we're not perfect. But this, for a first year where they're still ironing out the kinks, we're not doing too bad.
Isn't it funny, just a side note, that for a team coming off as bad of a season as we were last year, how many Thursday night games we've played, how many Sunday night games we've played, and how many Monday night? I mean, I believe that's 5 games out of our first 8 have been at special times, national mm-hmm. coverage. And I kind of look at the NFL and says, what were you thinking? Because, we kind of stunk and fired coaches and everyone was really, really bad last year. Like you said, we weren't a team to watch. Coincidentally, 5 out of 8 games are, prime time or national audience games, and we're 7-1. So maybe that was the secret. We just need more Sunday night and Monday night and Thursday night games.
Apparently so. I hate them because I have to drive home at their home games. And it's one long ride in the middle of the night dodging to here.
Aaron Charles Rodgers. If you remember, he's washed up. He's lost his touch. He's a diva and spoiled. But look what he has been doing, especially these past couple weeks. Wow. Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, you forgot. Totally uncoachable and lost his touch, by the way, if you're going to throw in all the other pejoratives. It's Rodgers doing Rodgers things. And one of the things that made, I think, the 2010 season so special is what we really had the next man up mentality. And it was a cast of nobodies that were doing spectacular things. And I think you're seeing version 2.0 this year with Aaron Rodgers and his receiving core. Yeah, I saw a great picture of Davante Adams working out in practice today. That was very encouraging, but I don't know when he's going to be returning. So right now it is MVS and a cast of nobodies. But he's making them look good. He is raising their level of play where they look like a bunch of all pros. And we've seen it in the past. We had that magical cast of characters in 2010, 2011, 2012, that famous Sports Illustrated cover of our receivers. And when you look at it, were they really that great? Yeah, they were good. But then you had like a James Jones and a Greg Jennings, and they went to other teams and they weren't so great. Rodgers makes his receivers look good. He gets them to buy into his game. And you had people like Kumaro with that impossible catch last week. Jamal Williams catching a garbage pass that was meant to go into the end zone and just to be thrown away. And Rodgers is making them look fabulous. And they're playing to his level of play. And I think that's something that's really special about him. And I think we haven't seen that in years. And we're seeing it again.
Well, no disagreement whatsoever. And the fact is, if you remember at the beginning of the season, he was struggling in this new system, struggling with the offense, having to wear a wristband with all the plays on it.
He's still wearing it.
Right. But he had to do it. And that was kind of a big deal for him, for all of us in that sense. And I don't know. I just think that what we're seeing from Aaron Rodgers now is that willingness to get back there and start firing that ball. But he has that accuracy back. And we've not seen that for a little while. And it's kind of exciting to see that again. When you look at the pass that he had to Kumaro in particular, I'll agree with you. I think that the pass that he had to Williams was probably a Jason Witten, Brent Jones kind of thing, where we're going to throw it to the 6'7" tight end and either he's going to catch it or no one's going to catch it kind of thing. And it just so happened Jamal Williams was behind, which is fine. It looked genius. It was a great pass. It was a great play. I have no issues. But that play to Kumaro, I was not really a quarterback, but I've thrown enough footballs and thrown enough on my run to understand exactly what happened. And as a right-handed quarterback, breaking to your right, when you throw the ball while basically diving to your right, it's going to slice. It's going to cut to the right, almost like a golf ball or even like you see sometimes on a field goal. And you kind of know that's going to happen. And how he did that to say, I'm going to throw this ball, keeping in mind where Kumaro was, so that ball literally sliced and arced to the right so that he had that tiny window where Kumaro could have caught that. That was genius.
And look at the
99.9% of all quarterbacks in the NFL who try to make that pass are intercepted.
And look at how tight the coverage was on Kumaro. It was he threaded a very tiny needle on that throw. And I can't remember if it was that throw or the throw to Williams where you see the replay, and neither of his feet are on the ground when he released the ball. So
right.
It wasn't just he was off balance. He didn't have any leverage with his legs. So this was one of these Rodgers doing Rodgers thing throws. And I think they do the stats on, you said like it had like real tiny percentage of that actually working. And if you looked at the odds of that type of throw, like you said, like 99.9 won't get it. Yeah, Rodgers has got his groove back. And I'm not surprised he struggled the first couple games. And I think that's in part because he really didn't play in the preseason. I get it. There's the calculated risk of let's not injure Rodgers in the preseason. So his learning curve was those first 3 to 4 games. And now things are starting to click. He's really getting comfortable in that offense. And more importantly, LaFleur is starting to trust him as well, too, when he starts to go rogue, that it makes sense.
We've talked about this before on how Aaron is pretty much an introvert and how he has always had this relationship with McCarthy. This is a new Aaron Rodgers, I think, just in terms of his own approach, psychological leadership approach to the game. He's opened up in a new way that I don't think we've seen maybe before in his career.
No, and I don't know if it's because he's close in age to the coach. Yeah, he's never going to be an ENTP like you or me. That's never going to change.
Thank goodness, because he wouldn't be that good of a quarterback.
No, he would not be. He'd be a hot mess of, hey, squirrel. But I don't know if it's the age similarity to LaFleur, because there's something to be said about being in the same generation and the communication style. So there may be some of that. Where I think at the end of the McCarthy tenure, it was a little bit of that age difference of don't tell me what to do, Dad. But I think you're seeing Rodgers evolve as a leader in different ways, where you'd see him more adversarial in years past. And now I think the communication is better. It wasn't the play fell apart. Now they're just kind of screaming at each other, where you started to see at the end of the tenure with McCarthy. Is that something didn't work? You see LaFleur and Rodgers talking it over. Yeah, they might not be the friendliest at times, but there's definitely, you can tell they're listening to each other. And what the other thing is, when you get these mic'd up these interactions with them, you've got LaFleur encouraging him on. Like we mentioned it last week when Rodgers like, I want to score 5 touchdowns, and LaFleur looks at him with 5, I want 6. He knows how to motivate a quarterback.
No, I think we've got some good things going on here with Aaron Rodgers. And a happy Aaron Rodgers and a productive Aaron Rodgers sure doesn't hurt a 7-1 record. What does hurt a 7-1 record is the lack of a kick return game, which has been very rough on us. Obviously, we've lost Darius Shepherd. May he rest in peace. I think the writing's been on the wall for a while when he had that absolutely miserable game about 3 weeks ago. And what you really saw from him is a guy who's been playing scared. And I've commented on this on many years past in Cheesehead Radio. I think, Ross was his name, was the guy we had.
Oh, yeah, yeah, number 11.
Going to Detroit. Yeah, I forgot his first name. But
number 11.
I remember, yeah, he got just piled on for one error that he had made. And I really thought he had a lot of potential, but you just saw it destroy his confidence, especially when the fan base really just started firing off at him. And he ended up getting cut. I don't know if Shepherd really had a chance to come back from that. When you saw him fielding punts, he was just being cautious. He's fair catching. He's being so worried about fielding the ball now that we're not really making a difference in the run back. It's tough because I think it said we ranked 30th out of 32 teams right now in kick return game.
Well, I think you see a little different style. When Ross screwed up, he was run out of town that week. And that was McCarthy's style. You know, I'm looking for the sacrificial lamb for our mistake. So here you go. Goodbye. You know, he kind of did it with Montgomery last year. You make a mistake, you're gone. It took 3 weeks to release him. And part of me wants to think that LaFleur wanted to give him a chance. Let's see if you can prove yourself. You know, can you for one mistake. But you're right, CD. I think he really got spooked by his mistake. And the NFL is a really unforgiving league. And I think people started to tee up on him knowing that they sensed blood in the water. He was scared. You're right. He was making mistakes. If he wasn't fair catching, he was letting the ball bounce. And that's how he ended up with something on the 1 yard line last week. And I feel bad, but at the same time, it really looks like LaFleur tried to give him a chance to kind of redeem himself, but it just wasn't going to happen. And in these situations, that clean break and a chance to catch on with another team is probably the best thing to happen. Yeah, I think if you're going to get over that type of being a level of being spooked, you need to overcome it with a different team. Otherwise, you're going to have the same ghosts chasing you the rest of the season.
Yeah, kind of like Sam Darnold. I think he's seeing ghosts out there.
Oh, almost definitely.
Tremont Smith was waived a couple weeks ago. We had him on the practice squad. He has been activated. He did play for us a little bit earlier this season, was mediocre, but remember, he did play really, really well as returner for Kansas City last season. So I guess we're going to hope. I mean, he'd say it can't get any worse. So let's hope that Tremont Smith might be the answer there.
And if he's not the answer, we know at least Tremont Williams can fair catch it and not drop the ball. So there's always your plan. Your plan Z is put the 108-year-old out there to catch it because, honestly, he's not having a bad season. And part of me knows he's going to hang on to it.
Well,
yeah,
that's all you need.
I would give Tremont. Yeah, exactly. To quote RuPaul, don't screw it up. Except he doesn't say screw it up.
That's true. Just real quick, a couple of activations and things going on today. Evan Bayless was cut today, tight end, and Darius Shepherd was also cut. We have an upgrade with Tremont Smith, so we are still one roster spot available. Maybe by the time you hear this broadcast, it'll already be in there. But a little excitement because we have Jace Sternberger and Ibrahim Newmama Campbell, both of whom have been on injury. They need to either be activated by November 5th, or they need to be cut, or they need to be on injured reserve the rest of the season. I think there's some excitement to see Mr. Sternberger get back in.
Oh,
this
most
game.
Definitely. Because, you know, Mercedes Lewis is having a good season. I like Sternberger. I think there's a lot of potential there. I think because Graham is so hit or miss, having a third viable option as a tight end can only help us at this point.
Well, no kidding. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's take a break. I think it's time to do our Packer Tweets.
Packer Tweets. From Packer Tweets.
Interestingly enough, it's going to be a Patrick Mahomes-themed Tweets of the Week this week. As you know, if you're watching the game, if you're watching the game, there couldn't be more than probably 2 or 3 minutes without a shot of Patrick Mahomes reacting to something on the field, particularly whenever the quarterback was sacked or his receiver dropped pass. Quickly look at Patrick Mahomes, because clearly he would have made it. It was funny the first 430 times. After that, it started getting a little annoying. So we're just going to share our two Packer tweets, and I think we're just going to let these both these people win this week. So, Kelly, your tweet of the week.
All right. My favorite pantless compatriot on Twitter, James Corsmo of Titletown Sound Off, he wrote, "I wonder what Patrick Mahomes is doing right now." Because seriously, you're right. It was like 10 billion types of stuff, like Patrick bored, Patrick picking his nose, Patrick looking at his watch. You know, it was like every reaction shot was the same. It's like he just looked bored and disgusted.
Well, continuing the theme, mine goes to our good friend Caitlin Sharkey at K Rose Sharkey. Been following her for many moons. Her comment during the game was, "If you're playing the Mahomes shot drinking game tonight, please be safe." A little public service announcement from Caitlin.
And I think that's a slightly better take on that. It's kind of funny, and it was totally true, because if you were playing that game, you would have been, like, blind by the end of the night.
Absolutely. Well, James and Caitlin, we're just going to give it to both of you. We're not going to vote. You both are this week's Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week.
Hey, the Packers have decided who's going to be in the next class of the Packers Hall of Fame. So
Bucky Scribner?
Yeah, him too.
Okay.
All right. Don Bracken. Two of my favorite secondary players of all time, Al Harris and Charles Woodson, are going to be inducted into the Pac-12 Hall of Fame this year. So hooray. And I think it's only a matter of time for Woodson gets his nod for the Hall of Fame in Canton.
Well, I think that's a definite.
It's a definite.
Absolutely.
Once
Absolutely.
He hits his eligibility, he's going to be a first ballot, no doubt.
You know, really, really love Al Harris.
I do. He was consistent. He was there, and he got the job done.
Real introverted guy too. You know, just was always kind of quiet
Very
to himself.
Quiet.
But yeah, but you really loved that game against the Seattle Seahawks where he made that interception in overtime and returned it for a touchdown.
We're gonna take the ball, and we're gonna win. Me, me, me.
But I mean, you're talking an iconic. I mean, you can't think of Al Harris without thinking of that, you know, his left arm up in the air with the number one pointed straight up there and running that ball in. I mean, that should be a statue. That should be a statue out front of Lambeau, just that pose, because it is so iconic for the Packers, for that era. But you can't think of Al Harris any other way than that iconic moment. And how many NFL players get that kind of iconic moment in their careers?
You know, that ranks up there, like, I think with Leroy Butler and the first Lambeau leap, which is another thing that
sure.
sticks in my mind. You know, you snag the ball, you score, and just the exuberance afterwards stays with you. And those images, or Nick the Pick, when he got the interception in the Super Bowl, him on his knees, arms up, just jubilant. You know, those are images that stay with you forever.
Antonio Freeman with the improbable bobble. I mean,
oh God, yes.
He's forever associated with that play. And it's great. I mean, all these players had great careers other than that, but to have that defining moment, it's really great. And obviously with Chuck, I think it's great for him. It was fun to see him in Green Bay a couple weeks ago. He was up there for the game and, you know, I remember he was standing outside the hotel across from Lambeau and saying, "Hey, everyone keeps asking who I'm rooting for. I just want to see a good game." Well, I said, if Packers winning by a lot is a good game, I hope he was happy. But you know,
he's
a good guy. Yeah, good guy.
And so. I think it's unfair to ask who he's going to root for, because I think he's got his heart in both places. You can't separate Woodson from being a Raider, because that's where he developed as a player. And that's where he went when he was done, you know. We were saying his tenure in Green Bay was sandwiched with being a Raider on both sides. So it was a fun homecoming for him. He got to cheer for both of his teams.
So switching topics, we talked about our entitled town. We've talked about the wailing and gnashing of teeth with every possible trade partner, trade player that's available from any team, anyone that could be available, that the Packers have to trade all of their next year's draft picks to get as many of them as possible for right now, because we're only 7-1, and clearly we need this to get over the hump. We just acquired, don't have you heard that? We just acquired a Pro Bowl receiver at the trade deadline, and literally we didn't have to give up anything for him. How would you feel about that?
Who it? Yeah, I think I like who it is.
Yeah, what's his name?
Yeah, I think his number is 17. Yeah. I can't think of the name.
Devontae Adams. How
Packers Twitter, they drive me nuts with free agency or anyone up for trades. Like, they'll mention, like, absolute garbage. It's like Antonio Brown. Like, no. Oh, hey, how about Larry Fitzgerald? Okay, he's like 112 years old, and I'm not going to give away a first round and 2 second round picks for anyone who is at the end of their career or is damaged goods or is like my Civic I traded away before it completely died with its fading transmission. And I'm like, okay, I'll take what I can get for it. But hey, if I can get $4,000, that'd be fabulous. You know, no, I don't want everyone else's sloppy seconds that they're trying to offload right now, because any quote unquote premier receiver that's trying to get traded right now, there's a big asterisk of buyer beware. You know, I don't want to buyer beware anybody midseason that's going to have zero chemistry with the rest of the team or is a ticking bomb with an injury. You know, there's a reason they're getting traded away. And
so the Chargers like aren't really that good of a team, Kelly. I mean, they're not that good. So do you feel any need, especially with maybe what you know about turf toe disease, known as turf toeitis, is it really a necessity to rush him back even at 90%, 95% in this game?
I would say them pin for later in the season when it really matters. Look at how they performed against the Chiefs. Granted, Mahomes wasn't there. Their defense isn't super stout, but they also weren't a cakewalk. Rodgers is clicking with people you never even thought of, like Kumaro, like the alien lizard himself. I don't want to rush Adams and set him back with a game that I think we can win without him.
Exactly. Now, look, we have the Carolina Panthers coming up after next week. The Panthers are going to be a little more of a challenge right now. The Panthers, I think, 4-3, 3-1 on the road. Then you're kind of looking at the Chargers right now, who are 3-5, but are just looking really bad. The Panthers have a lot going for them, a little bit of a better defense. You sure'd like to have them in there. I guess just remembering what I know about turf toe and remembering the days of Sterling Sharp, I sure don't want him coming in and aggravating and being out another 4 or 5 weeks. I think you make sure he's totally healthy and he doesn't need to rush back for this game. I think our boys are playing pretty well at wide receiver. Topic I think we're going to look at is our offensive line. And we keep mentioning week after week how we have really some great individual efforts. I think I picked Brian Bulaga for the past couple of weeks as my sharp cheddar. We, of course, Bakhtiari has been great, although he got injured last week. Some really great performances by Jenkins and Lindsley along the line last week. But sometimes it's like you have great individual performances, but I don't know if they're all coming at the same time because Rodgers is still getting a lot of company in the pocket. And obviously some of it is because he hangs on to the ball, but somehow or another, we've got to start getting this line to either give Rodgers more time or Rodgers has to get rid of that ball a little bit sooner.
I think the big problem, and it's been a problem for years, is getting rid of the ball sooner. And I think we started to see that kind of creep back in the last game where he started getting sacked and taking big hits. Yeah, I think this is going to be a big test this week. Their defense is not super strong, but I think there's going to be challenges. And what makes me always worried is when he holds onto the ball forever, that's when he gets clobbered and he breaks collarbones, and I don't want that to happen. But as he's getting more comfortable in this offensive scheme, I think hopefully he's not going to be making these mistakes. And that's something I think that he and the quarterback coach and LaFleur can start to work on. Again, I know it's something that McCarthy worked on with that timer and the alarm, kind of like shaking the can of pennies around a dog trying to correct behavior. But I think that's something that can be a goal for the second half of the season is that snappy, get rid of it in under a couple seconds. You know, when you start holding on to the ball 5-7 seconds, that's when he gets sacked. And that drives me bananas, I'll be honest about it.
Well, Joey Bosa will be on the other side of the ball, and there have been people. The argument is, should we not name him the next best defensive player of all time? And you're just kind of like, wait, he's only played in like 7 games, but he's been a pretty impact player. So, I mean, maybe this will be another Khalil Mack kind of test for this offensive line. I think we're going to see if they're able to get some penetration, that if we still need to do some shoring up or some better teamwork for the offensive line. But once again, as you said, I sure wish Mr. Rodgers would use his checkdowns a little bit more often.
And that's still one of his Achilles heels. He's gotten better with screen passes, but his checkdowns, it's like, oh my gosh, go through your progressions back or whatever you have to do. But I noticed in the last game, we were shoring up the offensive line a little bit more. You had tight ends kind of plugging gaps. You would put our fullback in weird places, which is something McCarthy would have never done. And I was like, hey, creative placement of it. Or even using the running backs. I think, you know, with somebody like Bosa out there, I can't help but think that they are scheming against him because obviously he's going to be the one that's going to get to Rodgers. So I would be very surprised if he's not double teamed a lot of times.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of old friends or people we're going to be facing on the other side today, an old friend is Casey Hayward, who we're going to see for the, I don't know if this is the first or second time since he left the team. Since
second,
2016 is when we let him walk. He has made 2 Pro Bowls and has 13 interceptions during that time. Given the number of defensive backs we have plied through over since that time, drafted and cut, drafted and traded, boy, sometimes it seems like it might have been nice to have Casey Hayward around. And I think he'll be looking to give his old team a little show of what he's learned since his days in Green Bay.
I really think he was one of the victims of the one-and-done type mistakes with Mike McCarthy. As soon as he got on his bad side, you were out of town. And, you know, at the time, he was one that, oh, he's old, he's out of touch, he's losing that, you know, that step. And honestly, looking back, he just didn't fit in the McCarthy scheme. And a lot of these players that we've offloaded are flourishing on different teams. And I think he's got a little revenge tour he's going to be having during this game. He wants to prove himself. And he knows Rodgers' habits, too. He practiced against him for how many seasons? Several. So, yeah, I think he could be a threat in the secondary. So I think, at least to our advantage, it's not going to be the McCarthy schemes. It's going to be still Aaron Rodgers, but it's going to be a Lafleur offense. So I think that's going to be to our advantage because, let's face it, we've said this a million times over, McCarthy was painfully predictable and Lafleur is not.
Nope. An illusion of complexity.
That's what I love about it. It's like he's going to give you a different look to it, but it's going to be very simple at times.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And last point before we hit our Hot Pockets for the evening, this is probably going to end up being a home-away game. Vivid Seats has predicted 70% of the seat in quote-unquote Dignity Health Sports Park, which is apparently the name of the stadium they play in, will be occupied by... It is the worst
stadium name.
I mean, it's terrible. Worth like the Monster.com bowl game, whatever. But they're going to be occupied by Packer fans. 70% of the people in the stadium that we can't even comprehend the name of, only 30% of the fans are actually going to be Charger fans.
So why the heck does Los Angeles need two NFL teams if they can't fill either one of their stadiums? Riddle me that, Batman.
Well, you know, I feel bad, and I think I commented on this last year. I did some stat crunching on the Chargers and how much that even now more of their viewers are still from San Diego than actually watch in Los Angeles. So this is not a team that has any attachment from the city they presently play in. And now they're fighting for fans with another team. So I feel a lot of antipathy anyway for Los Angeles because they haven't shown that they can hold on to a team anyway.
They're
they move out. It's not a football town. You know,
the Rams come and gone out of Los Angeles, seriously.
Mm-hmm. So as I'm concerned, move San Diego back to the Chargers and, you know, let them have at least a mediocre fan base. They would have a fan base, but they literally don't have one in the, you know, second most populated city in America, and they can't even get people into the stadium.
How much do you want to bet if you walked up to the game, you could get tickets dirt cheap at the stadium on Sunday? $20, let's go watch the Packers. It's a testament to the Packers fan base travels well.
Mm-hmm. Well, but, you know, I've got friends that I've followed on Twitter for years, and they all live in California. I mean, they're excited because I think it was a friend at
Jamie, no last name.
She was just saying, this is going to be the feel of a Lambeau Field game. And oh, she's never been to Lambeau. And think how exciting that is. You get to go to Lambeau, and it's essentially Lambeau West, and you don't even have to travel to Green Bay. So it's really
and
exciting.
And this time of year, you get better weather. You can wear shorts of the game if you want to.
Oh, gosh, that sounds so good after sitting outside trick-or-treating tonight.
Oh, it was so cold tonight. Be happy neither one of us is in Madison. They've got, like, what, 4 or 5 inches of snow? It's like the snowpocalypse. It's like Merry Halloweenmas or something like that.
Rude.
But yeah, I think it's exciting because there are a lot of Packer fans just in California, because I don't think they're, you know, unless you like, Oakland has a pretty good fan base, and I feel bad that they're moving to Los Angeles. There's San Francisco, and now that San Francisco is hot, they've got lots of bandwagoners again. But the fact that Los Angeles doesn't care apparently about football, we would be happy to fill those stands. And I think the Packers do really well when they've got our own stand, when it becomes the feel of a home game. And
right.
that was happening in 2010. We were traveling to away games in significant numbers.
Right.
And that also that, you know, what Rodgers always says, win your home games, split your away games, and you're 12-4, and you're a contender. And when these away games start to feel like home games, that splitting the 4-4 on the road suddenly becomes a less daunting task. And sometimes you can raise the bar of maybe let's go 6-2 on the road.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Well, I think it's time to get to this week's Hot Pockets.
Come on.
I guess I'll start first. It's Hot Pocket time. 7-1. Hopefully we end up 8-1 by the end of the weekend. Usually this time of year we're like, oh my God, can the bye happen and can we regroup? I'm kind of glad the bye is as late as it is this year, because you see the Packers building momentum game after game this year, where we had this kind of shuddering start at the beginning. We're starting to build up steam. And right now, I don't want them to lose momentum. I want them to build out each victory. We're starting to look at, yes, we can beat the Chargers on the road. We can beat Cam Newton and the Panthers at home. And those victories are building on each other. And I'm glad for once. Usually I'm like, oh my God, can we, you know, let's all lick our wounds. But the injury list is low compared to years in past. So what I'm trying to say, and I'm starting to ramble, is
that's a shock.
First, yeah, I know, shocker. And this is the first time in a couple of years where you're starting to see momentum building. Where last year it was like, okay, can we stop the losses? Can we stop the hemorrhaging? Can we stop the bleeding? This is a different team. We're not injured. We're not the walking wounded. Our injuries are manageable. Let's go full steam ahead. Like they were saying this week, all gas, no brake, or whatever it was, as opposed to McCarthy letting off the brakes or letting off the gas. Yeah, let's go all gas, no brake, and build on these victories. Build Rodgers' confidence. Let's do it without Devontae Adams. Let's save him for when that momentum's really building. Let's build on the defense. And I'm just happy to go along for the ride right now. I'm really content. I am enjoying watching the games. I'm not turning it off angry like I was last year. So I'm sick of the bellyachers on Twitter. I'm sick of saying, oh, we need to bring in the new shiny person that's getting mentioned in the Twitterverse about either as a trade or now or you know, earlier in the season as free agents. Let's enjoy the ride and stop pointing fingers and saying this is what's wrong with the team, because there's not really anything wrong with the team. Each week they seem to be getting better and better. The offense is clicking. The defense is clicking. Yeah, there's gaps at times. We need to improve tackling, but doesn't it feel good to be 7-1 right now, TV? Let's just enjoy the ride for once instead of complain. That's my
Hot Pocket.
That was really good.
Yeah.
You kind of spun a little spider web in your brain and had to kind of find your way out, didn't you?
I totally had a spider web in my brain because, you know what? I shouldn't go free range because it's like, oh my God, brain gone. We're really happy Al's not here right now. He'd be like, shut up, Kelly, quit rambling. This is what happens when you hand out candy and you don't finish the script, all right? I'm just going to be honest. I'm like, Bill Riley's like, screw it.
Couldn't have guessed. Couldn't have guessed.
Halloween. Yeah.
All right. You going to let me talk now?
Go talk.
Okay. My Hot Pocket. If you had taken a look at Aaron Rodgers' stats the past few weeks, kids, he had a perfect passer rating 2 weeks ago, and he had a perfect passer rating last week on third down. Now, clearly, he must be surrounded by nothing but Pro Bowl receivers to throw to, right? Wrong. He has a washed-up tight end. He has a blocking tight end. He has a wideout who was drafted in the fifth round, and after that, all wide receivers were undrafted free agents and running backs. And yet, with that crew, he is amassing perfect passer ratings when you consider that he did have real struggles to start the season. Now, Devontae Adams has been hurt, but this may be the best thing that has happened to Aaron Rodgers. You see, Aaron Rodgers has a proclivity to rely heavily on his favorite number one receiver early in the season. Jordy Nelson was famous for this for years. He would be getting 60% of the targets in a game. And you know that he's trying to rifle that ball to his favorite guy. Forcing way too many passes to a receiver, the defense knows it's going to be targeted is an old habit that this injury is helping break. You see, the point of being a true superstar in the NFL is elevating the play of those around you. And Rodgers has now done that with a band of cast-offs that would never, ever be our first choices to be starters. It has been the best for Rodgers because it's brought out the best in Rodgers, because he has brought out the best in others. Welcome back, Devontae Adams. You return to a far better offense and a far better quarterback than when you left. And that is my
Hot Pocket.
I like mine. That was pretty good.
Yeah, yours was actually pretty succinct and not a rambling disaster like mine.
It wasn't quite as spiderwebby, but that's okay.
Totally spiderwebby. It's like, mine was blank wrap.
No, it wasn't. It was. Just,
yeah, it was exactly what happened. Okay, yours summed up kind of what I was trying to say. It's like one of the great things about Rodgers. It's like the last.
But you were trying to say
like
14 other things at the same time, so you got lost.
Know.
So I helped. I brought a little clarity to your point.
That ADHD brain of mine, it's going in four different directions. But you know, you bring up something really that's really a great point, and they pointed it out in the last two games. It's like halfway through the game, they're like, and Rodgers is thrown to his eighth receiver of the game. Yeah, he's spreading it out. And
you're
what's been really
who's
fun,
open. You throw
who's open.
To who's open.
But you know who has really benefited from this is our running backs.
Exactly.
They have become outstanding receivers with Devontae Adams gone. And I don't think they would have even gotten targeted had he not gone down.
Exactly. We'll see more of this coming up on Sunday. So let's give you our
Cheesehead Radio Packers Game Predictions.
First of a couple late afternoon games. This one will be on Sunday in Los Angeles, a home away game as Packers take on the Chargers. How do you see this afternoon game going, Kelly?
I think we all know that the first coaching casualties are coming out of San Diego. You know, they got rid of what their offensive coordinator. Is that what it was this week, CD?
Ken Whisenhunt.
Yeah, gone. Look what happened when the Packers did that last year. It was after the Cardinals game. I'm driving home with Mike. My daughter went to the game with me, and I wasn't paying attention. I was looking at traffic as well. I was stuck on Highway 41, and she was just happened to be scrolling through social media. She's like, "Mom, they just canned the coach." Like, oh, okay, we canned the coach. And the very next week, the Packers played with new spring in their step under Philbin. So we know what it's like just to come to mediocrity and what it's like to clean house. And last year, the Packers cleaned house, and they rallied the next week to win. So that shot in the arm can be some powerful medicine. But to quote Iron Man, you may have an army, but we have a Hulk. And our Hulk is green, and he's got a 12 on his jersey. And at the end of the day, we're still playing San Diego. So our Hulk going to overcome their team. So Packers 28, Chargers 17.
All right. My prediction, the bad news when a struggling team makes a big move, like the Chargers did this week, firing their offensive coordinator, usually means there's a bit of an adrenaline jump. I mean, the other team figures that, hey, this guy was gone. We better step it up. And sometimes they are willing to try new things. There's an emphasis on wanting to get their running game going this week. I've heard inside the press box that they realize the Packers have been a little porous with their run defense. So who knows? Maybe there'll be this big adrenaline jump and it's a trap game. The good news, these are still the Chargers. Packers 34, Chargers 13.
And we have the home field advantage.
70%. That is just crazy.
I kind of feel bad for the Chargers because they were pretty good a year or two ago, and now they're kind of where we were last year, struggling, kind of rudderless. So, yeah, I feel good about a win this week.
Absolutely. Let's blow this popsicle stand.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio in our 10th season. Make sure to head over to PackersTalk.com, where you can explore several unique Packers podcasts. Please follow at PackersTalkNet on Twitter and like us on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you'll find it. Be sure to subscribe and please leave us a review if you can. You can also listen to us by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatching app and search for Packers Talk. Finally, please be sure to support our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find it on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap. Happy Halloween. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go. 8-1 next week. We'll see you then.
Cheesehead Radio.